Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Well, as we mentioned, Mike Pence is campaigning in New Hampshire today. Meanwhile, the man at the top of the ticket tweeted earlier today, quote, "They will soon be calling me Mr. Brexit." All caps on the Mr. Brexit. The Twitterverse was confused, and the Washington Post threw up a headline saying, quote, "Donald Trump just called himself Mr. Brexit and nobody knows why," but then offered the interpretation that the UK surprised the world by voting to leave the European Union, despite polling that indicated otherwise, so perhaps Mr. Trump is saying he'll surprise the world the same way in November. Well, over at Hillary Clinton's Twitter account, she tweeted today, "We know that giving millionaires huge tax breaks doesn't help our economy, so why would we try it again, Donald?" Striking a provocative personal tone, which, of course, Donald Trump frequently does on his Twitter account as well. Now, the point of all this? We are in an era where social media is driving political narrative. It's transforming how elections are done. So what effect is that having on our democracy? Well, Nico Maley and Amy Mitchell have considered this question deeply. Nico is the director of the Shorenstein Center of Media, Politics, and Public Policy at the Harvard Kennedy School, and he joins us in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
It's a pleasure to be here, Meghna.
And Amy Mitchell is director of journalism research at the Pew Research Center. Amy, great to have you as well.
Good to be here. Thanks.
So let me just start with a quick question to both of you. And Nico, I'll just turn to you first. We've had Twitter, obviously, in election cycles in the past. But are we seeing it play a different or more intense role this time around?
Well, we actually haven't had Twitter in that many election cycles. Barack Obama announced he was running for president in 2007 before Twitter was launched. And it really only got started in kind of popular use in the 2012 presidential cycle. Mm-hmm. So I'd argue it's still a pretty new medium for presidential politics. Not to mention that smartphones, the ability to tweet from your phone is a pretty new innovation in and of itself.
Right. And so, Amy, I think I saw a number somewhere floating around that perhaps this time around in 2016, we have more people who say they're getting information about the election through social media than conventional news sources. Is that true?
Certainly than some conventional news sources. I'm not sure what that number was, but we find that social media now is among the mainstream ways that people are following the election as well as following news in general, often outpacing print newspapers for sure. Cable news does tend still to be the primary way that most Americans are learning about the election in particular, but social media is right up there, and we have some new data on people that are turning directly to the Clinton or Trump social media feeds for news about the election. We're at about a quarter of the American public, the U.S. adult population at this point, that are turning directly to those kinds of posts for election news.
Okay, interesting. So Nico, then how much does this matter? Let's just get right to the heart of the question that, I sort of posed rhetorically in the intro. I mean, what effect is the new large role that social media is playing? What effect is that having on this election?
I think we've seen it had a pretty substantial effect in three main ways. The first is that Trump has definitely used his Twitter account to shape the conversation, to drive the news cycle. He used it brilliantly in the primaries in order to divert coverage away from things he didn't want people to pay attention to. Sometimes it was his opponents. And he uses it to go on the attack and to try and change the narrative with great frequency. I think the tweet you mentioned in the opening about he's Mr. Brexit, well, he's in the middle of a spat of negative news coverage about his shakeup at the top of his campaign again, and he wants to change the narrative. He wants people talking about something else other than his faults and weaknesses. He's trying to use Twitter to shape that conversation, really as an alternative almost to holding a press conference or press availability.
Huh. Amy, your thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's been really interesting to look at how the two candidates are using social media differently, both in, certainly a controlling manner in terms of controlling their message, using it to put out the kind of message they want. But we have found in the posts that Trump and his campaign are putting out, he's often, if he's linking, he's linking to news media or he's linking to other kinds of sources. He tends to retweet citizens more than he retweets other kinds of sources. The Clinton campaign, on the other hand, is largely keeping things insular. They are circling back, linking back to things that are on the campaign website pages, linking and retweeting things that the campaign has put out on their own. So taking a different strategy in the kind of information sources they're using, that very much making it a part of their messaging and their information flow out to the public.
Yeah, and Nico, have you noticed those similar types of differences between the Trump and Clinton campaigns' use of social media?
Absolutely. And in fact, looking at Trump's own tweets, it's very clear that his tweets are coming from two different phones. There's one is an iPhone, and then there's another phone that's an Android phone. And we know that Trump himself has been photographed using an Android Galaxy smartphone. And most of the tweets that talk about crooked Hillary, most of the tweets that talk about the dishonest media come from the Android phone.
Right. So, you know, we were talking a lot about Twitter because, of course, Donald Trump is especially active on Twitter. But there's all sorts of different social media platforms, as we all know, Facebook, Instagram, et cetera, to name a few. I mean, Amy, I'm wondering what you think about how in terms of campaigns reaching out directly to voters and creating a new kind of voter engagement. Because I was thinking it was just recently in the past week or so where Hillary Clinton's campaign released a podcast with an interview, and I put the words interview in quotes because it was a campaign released podcast, but a long conversation with Hillary Clinton in that podcast. And this comes at a time where the Clinton campaign is under constant criticism from media outlets for not doing enough press conferences. So it's a completely different kind of engagement that once again does that end run around conventional media and conventional journalists who seek that same access to the candidate. So how much is that sort of changing how we were understanding this campaign?
Well, you know, we've certainly been seeing over the last, you know, three presidential election cycles, really, campaigns trying to figure out how do we use technology, how do we use these tools to connect directly to voters and to members of the public, in many cases looking to bypass the traditional media and have a direct relationship with the public. In 2008, as Nico mentioned earlier, when social media was really just beginning, we had less than a quarter of the public that was using social media at all, we did have developments in that space. And at that point, it was a lot of like, how many different platforms can I possibly be on? In the study that we did that year, John Edwards had surpassed all the other candidates in the primary with 23 separate places that people could connect with him that were listed on the campaign website. That was a year where MySpace was big, Flickr was big, Meetup. Obama had the most friends on MySpace. But if you look at the overall numbers there, it's still, you know, it's relatively small, about 400,000 that were his friends on MySpace when you compare it to the kind of numbers we're seeing today. But, you know, again, a lot of different types of experimentation. 2008 was the big year of the blogs.
Right.
And that was a year where actually we even saw more experimentation with giving the public a little more control over the message. So 7 of the 19 sites that we studied actually encouraged supporters to start their own blogs that were officially connected to the campaign.
Even in back in 2003, 2004, I worked on the Dean campaign, and Howard Dean's ability to be competitive in the primary in 2003 was really built around his use of blogs and what at the time was called the Netroots, which was, I'd say, an earlier manifestation of social media. And on the conservative side in that race, the Swift Boat attack against John Kerry really started on conservative blogs in 2004. And so I think you can see that for decades you'd have the media and the political establishment kind of duke it out to create a campaign narrative for the public. But I think that beginning in the 2003, 2004 presidential cycle, we saw the emergence of the internet broadly speaking, as taking a role in crafting that narrative. That process got opened up for the first time, and the role of the gatekeepers began to be eroded. And in some sense, Donald Trump is the, you know, is the ultimate erosion of gatekeeping.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, he's the vanguard of a whole scale, full scale rejection of those typical gatekeepers. I do wonder, though. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to measure engagement, right, on social media, on the various platforms. But the ultimate measure of success is, you know, who goes to the polls and how they vote on election day. Do we have any sense from, you know, previous elections, even though, Nico, I take your point that we're only maybe a couple election cycles into seeing how important social media is, but how much engagement online is then translated into actual voting, Amy? Do we have any sense of that?
You know, that's something that we'll have to continue to watch to see. Now that we have so much of the public that, you know, it's now more than half, 62% of the public that are getting some news on social media, 84% of your 18 to 29-year-olds. So it's touching a lot of people. And, you know, the degree to which we can start to slice that and look at where your, you know, stronger voting population is one that's likely to have, they're likely to have gotten news on a lot of different platforms. When we ask about election news following, we still have a solid portion of the public that are getting election news on five or more different types of sources. So there's often a fairly wide mix. It's your young people that tend to be more concentrated around social media at this point.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the 2010 midterm election, we actually had one of the largest social science experiments ever conducted in cooperation with Facebook. An academic, James Fowler at UC San Diego, took everyone on Facebook at the time, about 64 million Americans, and ran different messages to them on Facebook to see, to try and figure out via a controlled academic experiment if you could increase turnout with Facebook. And sure enough, one of the findings of the study was that if Facebook showed you a message that said, these are your friends who have voted, that slightly increased the likelihood you would vote.
Wow. Okay. Well, finally, I'm curious to hear from both of you about sort of a philosophical concern, which always comes into play when we talk about social media, because there are a lot of people out there who say, yes, we might get more and more engagement with every election cycle that passes. But the pitfall of social media is that you can also sort of enter that echo chamber, that we might have more engagement, but people are getting a narrower buffet of points of view because of all those algorithms that are shaping what shows up on our Twitter feeds and Facebook, et cetera. I guess I'm just sort of asking from a data perspective, do we know that's happening, or is that a legitimate concern, Nico?
I think it's definitely a legitimate concern, yeah. But we just don't have enough information to know how big of a concern it should be and what kind of impact it might be having. You know, people consume a wide range of media. They listen to the radio. They watch cable TV. Social media is just one part of their media diet for the most part. And frequently people have some sense of the implicit choices involved in the kind of media they're consuming.
Yeah, I mean, we're starting to get some nuggets of insight into this space, but there is still a lot more to learn. And one of the challenges is that the very dynamics of social media mean the impact and influence is going to differ for every single individual,
mm-hmm.
because it's going to depend on the makeup of their networks, on who the friends are in their networks, on what their behavior is and how the algorithm responds to that. We have found in our past research that those that are the most politically aligned, so they're the most consistently aligned with one ideology or another, tend to be those that are most likely to have networks that reinforce their own views politically. Most people still, even those that are on those edges, still see a mix of views to a certain extent, but they're more likely to have a larger portion of those that are reinforcing. We also have found in our, and that carries through to the people you talk about politics with also. It's not just in the social network chamber.
Yeah.
We did find when we asked people about following the social media post of Trump or Clinton, that there is, you know, that there is some counter-following going on. So we had about 13% of Clinton supporters that were turning to Trump social media posts, and about the same percentage, 10% of Trump supporters turning to social media posts for Clinton.
So some crossover there.
Some crossover there.
Well, Amy Mitchell is Director of Journalism Research at the Pew Research Center. She spoke to us today from Washington. Thank you so much for your insight.
Thank you.
And Nico Maley, Director of the Shorenstein Center of Media, Politics, and Public Policy at Harvard's Kennedy School. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I'll see you on Twitter.
See you on Twitter. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakravarti. This is Radio Boston.